Hello and welcome to tonight's Arena, our annual look at the Writing Journal Winter Papers and the opening event of the Dublin Book Festival. We are delighted to be here in number one Windmill Lane with a very lively live audience. Hanging from the rafters they are. And they're very beautifully dressed, I must say as well, all of them. With me on stage we have another very lively bunch, the author of Night Boat to Tangier, and the Heart in Winter, and co-editor of Winter Papers, Kevin Barry. Alongside Kevin, a host of contributors to this year's edition, Pónas Vona Grork and Alice Lyons, writers across a number of disciplines, from fiction to autofiction to plays, Paulina Cosgrave and Angela Flannery. And tonight is more than just a night of readings and conversation, because we have a cracking house band with us. Delighted to be joined by Paul Noonan and Dahi O'Droney, the creative forces behind Houseplants. Paul is, of course, best known for his role as frontman of Bellex One, and Dahi O'Droney, an acclaimed producer and electronic artist in his own right. With Paul and Dahi this evening are Sinead White, who will be on piano and vocals, and Glenn Keating on electric bass. Houseplants have just released their second album. It's called Half Known Things. And to get the evening started, let's have a track from that album. This is Every Flower is a Field.
The way your lips turn, the way your grandmother's did, it is a torch, and this is how we keep it lit. Sometimes I catch you, your mouth set in thought, and my love language coming up short. Every flower, every flower's a field. I remember your face in the back seat of the car wash. You're out of your seat, excitement is real. Blue brush is coming like Cookie Monster. Went back the other day to relive the thriller. You on your phone, picking your feet, eating a whisper. Every flower, every flower's a field. Don't wake me up, leave me drunk in my dozing. I come to wiping my knuckles on my eyes. Dream lingers like a fog till the sun sends it scuttling like steam from the street. Morning unraveling.
Every flower, every flower's a field.
Oh. Houseplants with Every Flower is a Field. We'll be hearing lots more from the band during this Arena special, live from the Dublin Book Festival, which is opening the festival and celebrating the publication of Winter Papers 10, with its essays, its stories, its poems, its interviews and photo essays, and much more besides. As I mentioned to you, several of the contributors are with me on stage here, as is Kevin Barry, who along with Olivia Smith is the co-editor of the journal. Kevin, of course, has a new novel called The Heart in Winter. I'm sure we'll mention that along the way as well. Let me tell you a little bit more about our other contributors. Angela Flannery, author of The Amusements, won the Kerry Group Irish Novel of the Year and the John McGahan Prize, Arts Council Writer-in-Residence 2024 in Dublin City University. Fiona O'Gruach published 9 collections of poetry, most recently Hereafter, The Telling Life of Ellen O'Hara, the story of Irish domestic servants in the US in the 19th century. This was inspired by Fiona's great-grandmother, and she, Fiona that is the current Writer-in-Residence in St. John's College in Cambridge. Paulina Cosgrave is, to quote one of her poems, a Russian girl with an Irish surname, who was a Russian girl with a Jewish surname, who was a Russian girl with a Russian surname, who once spent 9 months in the belly of an Armenian girl with a Russian surname. Poetry says so much in a few words, doesn't it? In more prosaic terms, Paulina is a bilingual poet, a writer and performer based in Dublin. Her second poetry collection, Cargo, was published this year by the Gallery Press. And in October, she was part of the Dublin Theatre Festival in Global Desires, a piece by Outlandish Theatre. And also, at the end of the line there, is poet Alice Lyons, whose recent books include Una and The Breadbasket of Europe. Alice was born in Paterson, New Jersey, and she's lived in the northwest of Ireland since the last century. 1998, to be precise. Please welcome one and all. Here we are, Kevin. Winter Papers 10, which just like Winter Papers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, as the audience here in number one Middle Mill Lane can see, is a beautiful production, the size of the annual that we used to get as Christmas as kids, yeah. And full of this variety of material across all sorts of genres. Writers like Sarah Baum, Peter Murphy, Lucy Caldwell, and Sarah Maria Griffin, who I think were part of that, are part of this edition. Sarah Baum was also part of the first edition
there
back
was a
in
few,
10,
yeah,
2014.
Yeah.
But listen to the others who were there. Young fella called Donal Ryan, young woman called Sally Rooney, some band from Limerick called the Rubber Bandits, a filmmaker who was kind of beginning to make waves called Lenny Abrahamson. Those were, and Paul Muldoon was in there. He'd achieved a little bit at that.
What happened to Rubber Bandits? What happened to them?
I don't know. Yeah. Don't know.
No
what
sign.
There.
No sign.
But go back to 2014 and sending out that initial set of letters, what you were looking for, and the distance from there to here.
Yeah, it seems like no time, really, you know? It seems like the other week until you kind of sit down and think about it and look at the profile, as you just were doing so there, of some of the people who are in the number one, you know, and where they've gone to from now. So it's kind of, yeah, it's great. We're pleased as punch with ourselves to be 10, to be big
double
and,
numbers,
big and bold and going to discos and all that kind of thing now, you know.
Is it easier now for yourself and Olivia? Have you sort of got a rhythm and a way of going about it that, not that it does itself, but certainly it can't be as much of a scramble if that's what the first one
yeah,
was.
Yeah, it's kind of really kind of imposed a lovely kind of rhythm on our year, really, in County Sligo. So, and actually my favourite is the first few months of the year when we're just really yapping about it among ourselves, you know, and figuring out maybe what's going to come in and who we could ask to do something. And that's a really nice kind of dreamy, spacey time when you're just thinking about it. The summer is very busy when the stuff is coming in and I'm copy editing and we're looking at the design with our great John Foley down in Cork and all that. So it's it's a lovely kind of rhythm to the whole year now.
And in terms of the four contributors that we have here with us, if we can go to you first of all, journals like this, and specifically this one, I mean, I just love, as I say, the look of it, the shape of it, the variety of stuff in it. What does that mean to, you know, to writers based here in Ireland? What sort of platform does it give?
Well, I have to say, the other thing is the feel of it. It
feels
absolutely lovely in the hand, you know, and it really is
cloth
like
bound.
Cloth bound, and it's beautiful, and it looks beautiful. And I think when you're a poet, you're used to, I suppose, publishing in places where they try and squeeze the poems in because they want to fit in as many as they can. So there isn't always a lot of elbow room around the poem. And so what's lovely here is seeing, like, my two poems have a page each, which is very extravagant and very nice, I think.
And they're big pages, as I said.
They're big pages.
They're the size of a child's annual.
Yeah.
So that for the big children in the audience and who are here with us today. And Alice, you're doing a lot of nodding. I know you came to Ireland in 1998. Mm-hmm. Had you ever seen anything like this in the States before you came here? It's the look of it and the feel of it that really, as well as the content, that are so important.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And also, I think the thing that I love is that it's produced in County Sligo, where I live. It's you know, a little bit on the edge, and it's a gorgeous publication. The design by John Foley. Every year, I look forward to see what he does for the cover. It's just so beautiful, and this year is particularly special. This 10 in a spotlight.
Like so many writers, Angela Flannery, you have, you know, you've written across all sorts of genres, from journalism to essays to novels to plays. This book, this anthology, has all of the above, kind of, well, not novel, but it has lots of different genres within it.
Yeah, yeah, it does. I mean, it's funny because you were saying it's like a child's annual. It's on my Christmas wish list every year that someone buys it for me. So I have three things that I don't buy for myself: flowers, perfume, and winter papers. You know, so, and this year, I, you know, I'm in it, so it's kind of... Yeah, I guess I don't have to ask anyone to buy it for me now, but it's a real privilege. I mean, it's very special. It's an occasion.
Well, well done for letting them know on national radio that you want one for Christmas. Paulina, for you, equally, the platform that gives you for the short story that you have in here that we will talk about, it's unusual to get spaces where you can have provocative work like that published.
It's unreal, and it's my first short story published in Ireland. I have one published in the UK and one in Russia, but this one is my favorite child, so I'm very happy. And of course, oh my God, the edition itself, you know, it feels like one of the volumes of Dostoevsky in, you know, grandma's Soviet library, where she said, where's the other one? What did you do with them? Because they're precious and they're made with such care.
Yeah, but there you go. There are nine of them. Nine others of these. Kevin, I know you don't always have a piece in the journal. Now, did Olivia commission you? Did you decide with a little chat with yourself that you were going to put a piece in, or how did that come about?
I was pinned by my collar to the wall and told you, you're writing something for this year, yeah. So, it's always kind of time and what's going on my desk, and with the editing as well, will I have time to contribute something? But I managed it this year, yeah.
And your piece is called Down at the Central Hotel. The Central Hotel, of course, was a hotel in Exchequer Street, on Exchequer Street in Dublin. You know, let's read the opening paragraphs, because that's what the reader will get, and this will give us a sense of what you're talking about and the sort of people that were about there at the time.
Over the years, we became wiser to the Central Hotel. If sleep was badly needed, the solid move was to ask for a room on the Dame Court side. Once the Stag's Head and the Dame Tavern had chucked out for the night, the side street fell into a few hours of relative quiet, and your dreams might be disturbed only by the occasional melodious drunkard or the yowling of a lonesome dog. If you were in a room on the Georgia Street side, by contrast, you might as well still be out on the tiles yourself, with the raucousness and the beats rolling on until 3 at the Globe, and Socratic debates erupting outside the fried chicken establishments, and the shrieks and shattered glass of all the broken romances. After that, it was only an hour or two until the infernal swooshing of the street cleaning machines put paid to the notion of sleep altogether, and then there was the irritated chugging of the early traffic and the rolling in of the beer barrels and little thumps when they landed on the burlap sacks, and the furious mwarking of the homicidal gulls, and Dublin town generally coughing its lungs up of a morning like the haggard old lag that it is, and you're lying there, bug-eyed on the wrong side of the Central Hotel, with the twisted sheets of insomnia caught up in the crack of your arse, and God, how I miss it all now.
And every day is a school. That, by the way, was Kevin Barry reading from his essay Down at the Central Hotel, part of Winter Papers 10. A new verb there. Mwarking.
Mwark.
We should have a competition about who can spell that word without checking out the book.
I was trying to do a Dublin gull, who's a hard one to get down on the page.
Yeah. I heard lots of laughs of recognition regarding the Central Hotel from the audience.
It used to be it was our house in Dublin for years. We stayed there, and it's older iteration. It's about to be reopened under a new name and stuff. But it was a very reasonably priced hotel, bang in the middle of town. And lots of people who worked in the arts used to stay there, coming up and down from Dublin. And it was a great place. And Like, I wrote the essay out of...
You could actually afford to stay
it
there.
It was very affordable, you know. You'd get a room midweek, and you could argue to toss on the price. It wasn't like these algorithms you get now.
Yeah, but you could end up on the wrong side of the hotel, I guess.
You could be on the wrong side. But it was no, it was a lovely place, and it was kind of... As I was writing the essay, I was thinking about 10 years, actually, as a chunk of time. And, like, the changes in a city year by year can be almost imperceptible. But when you take 10 years as a unit of time, it becomes quite stark. And I was thinking about the 10 years since we started and the changes in the city, you know. And I think what's happened in that time is a lot of the kind of vestiges of the 20th century city are starting to disappear. And this Central Hotel always felt to be like part of 20th century Dublin. And it's sad that it's gone.
Are you getting nostalgic now in your old age? Had you to check yourself that those spectacles weren't rose-tinted as you look back?
I don't think so. I mean, I was determined for the piece not to fall into the kind of... There is a lot of doomsaying about the city, you know, and I didn't want to... That's a vast chorus already, and I didn't want to fall into that. But there have been, you know, changes in the city that have made it a more difficult place for creative people to be and for people in the arts to be. And that's a very important and dangerous change in lots of ways. So I couldn't put a remark on that as I wrote the piece.
This is kind of Celtic Tiger times. Alice, you moved here, as I said, in 1998. Was part of the decision to live in the Northwest, was that related to, you know, the expense of the city and all of that type of thing?
Totally, yeah, totally. Buying time was the motivation, and also being in a place that supports the arts more than the place that I came from. But definitely, and there's such an arts community now in the Northwest, you know, kind of from that time in the 90s until now.
Yeah. I saw you nodding a lot in recognition of the Central Hotel. Was it a little pad of yours at any point along the way? Angela Flannery, I'm talking about there. I saw you nodding and smiling, Angela.
I loved the Central Hotel as well, but actually I was just nodding in agreement with Alice. I've just come from GCU from another event for Dublin Book Festival called The Artist in the City, and exactly what Kevin was saying there about how artists are being priced out of Dublin. And it just makes me think, in 30 years time, what is the city going to produce in terms of writers and artists? You know, I left there tonight and Stephen James Smith was performing, and then Luke McManus was, you know, there for a screening of North Circular, and both of those artists, you know, that is exactly the kind of thing that they're talking about, this territory. Yeah.
Fiona, was it all, I'm saying Longford based, and I'm wondering where I'm getting that from. Am I right? Or was it always Longford?
No, I was born in Longford. I was born in Edgerstown, and I grew up across the real border in County Westmeath, but now I live in Sligo.
Ah, right. So further west.
Further west.
Further west. You never bothered with that Celtic Tiger lark. Paulini, I think when you moved to Ireland, it was well past the Celtic Tiger times. But had you experienced anything similar to that when you were living in Russia?
I think at the same time, despite the global crisis, global financial crisis, Russia had a lot of foreign investment. So around 2011, it was like daily almost $1 billion. So it was a different country, of course. It was very open and, you know, where it all went now. So,
however, what you have in Winter Papers 10 is an essay, it's a short story, I beg your pardon, called Miss Dublin. Miss Dublin is in a very contemporary Dublin, in fact, a very multicultural Dublin. What kind of inspiration did contemporary Dublin give you when it came to the writing of this story?
Well, it's set around 2015, 2016, and the multicultural background, I think, is very much secondary for that story, because I largely try to comment on the state of the housing and the state of the medical system, which I'm sure it's a very different world now, you know, almost 10 years after I've witnessed what I witnessed, being an interpreter in hospitals and courts. I think now it's probably a little bit more intense.
You're going to read a section from the story, some fairly strong sexual content within the story itself. This young woman is lively, shall we say.
Ah, she is. He didn't even know I wasn't local. Miss Dublin, he whispered, tonight is all about you. Hardly miss, yet I asked him twice on our way to his hotel if he really wanted to get it on with a girl in her period he hadn't even seen with the lights on. I'm a grown-ass man, he said. Come here. And our kiss transfigured O'Connell Bridge, lit up an otherwise hopeless night of gloom. It's all right. He introduced me to Attila Yozhev's poetry, Without God, a Homelet Either. It changed my life, making it less pathetic. I never asked his name. Mine was Miss Dublin. I bet his was something grim and harsh, like a glottal spasm, but we didn't need names because we were beyond any language, shrieking and growling like animals locked in the cage of his crimson hotel room, locked in each other. What a price he was for my first night in town. I almost thought I was straight. And then I packed him on his bloody mouth and pushed myself out of that cheap suite and into the crisp air of a perfect blue morning. I was afraid the magic would disappear if I stayed any longer, so I took it with me. And his watch, such lovely shine of his perky arrows. It has engraving, check it out. Not sure what it means. I loved my Magyar in that madness we shared. I did as my own flesh. I was his completely after he had consumed me. The eyes on him, the big black eyes of a heifer. We took a shower together. He stood there, not moving, observing my every centimeter, his skin burning from the scalding water. He wiped me dry with the only towel there was, thoroughly, gently, like I was a child. I just had to have his watch, not for money, not as a souvenir. A perverted delight to think about his face when he found out. Oh, it wasn't her. She wouldn't, would she? And I felt embarrassed and poisoned. I had never stolen before. Damn, I never sat on a face before.
Paulina Cosgrave reading from her short story Miss Dublin, which is featured in this year's Winter Papers. It really struck me, that's one of the gentler sections of the short story. It's quite a provocative piece. Lust and the power of lust is at the very centre of what you're talking about here, I think. There are other objects in there as well. And it links in some ways to Global Desires, the show you were involved in the Dublin Theatre Festival, which deals with the same some of the same types of topics. Finding the linguistic register, you know, and English is not your first language, finding the linguistic register for that, how difficult is it to get that visceral quality?
Well, unfortunately or fortunately, I'm used to sexualizing big topics, would it be war or poverty or something like that. Just put this in because it's just my plot device. It's not hard for me because I've been doing it. It's my shtick. I'm not very good at everything else.
So sex is presents you with a mode of expression that just other ways don't.
Well, I suppose sex and violence, just because we're, like, you know, we're sort of animals and that's what drives us.
And the Magyar and that those particular events in and around that period in Dublin, do you think it was specifically Dublin-based, or could that be anywhere? Because there is a European feel off some of the sense in the story, I felt as well.
Well, I thought, it's Dublin-based because of the destitute people that I try to describe, and because the main character of the story, I don't think it's an interpreter. I think it's the system, it's the medical system, for instance, you know, it's the way that homeless people are treated.
Yeah, because we should explain, while there is a very strong sexual content within it, it moves into a much more of almost a social commentary towards the end.
Well, I suppose I was trying to do that, yeah.
That's what you were trying to do. Vona, I'm talking to Paulina there about the whole idea of a linguistic register that you need in and around the body, in and around visceral expression. You have two poems in this latest edition of Winter Papers. You're going to read one of them for us on Paul Gorham or The Blue Hole. The body and that kind of visceral physicality are very present here as well.
Yeah, well, I think that one of the beauties of poetry for me, and one of the things that keeps me writing it, is to try and further explore this kind of interchange between experience and language that you use to try and interrogate it, excavate it, examine it, describe it, whatever. So non-linguistic experience and then trying to inveigle language onto it, and that sort of clash or that connection is the thing that I think is just fascinating for me as a writer.
The job of the poet in some ways.
It's the job of the poet, yeah, the job of the poem, yeah.
Let's hear it then on Paul Gorham or The Blue Hole.
The Atlantic agrees the cement wall only if twice a day by appointment. It gets to roughhouse and tussle it, pretending to hold it under, and then all kindness, just at the last minute, letting it up to grab at air, then lull. Which is where I come in, over the rocks, bringing my one and only body to a pool barely brimming the visible wall that promises to play nice with me, all the sea's knots unknotted, all its quarrels quelled. First the squall of skin and sea, then gently I quiet to its quiet, begin to feel as though my life thus far, every second of it, is what's under me, keeping me up, and my future, a life mask of sky fitted weightless to my face. I stay in until the water tires of me, climb out into a day along the spine of which I find myself licking salt from my forearm so that my tongue is stars in darkness, my mind like a fossil in gaunt sun, losing less than I thought, growing old.
Fiona Groer reading her poem on Paul Gorham, The Blue Hole, which is featured in this year's Winter Papers Literary Journal. We'll be back with more from this arena special at the Dublin Book Festival after this break.
This November, experience the award-winning play No Magic Pill by Christian O'Reilly. A hilarious and heartfelt story inspired by disability rights activist Martin Nocton. Transformative theatre, Irish Independent, gutsy and engaging, The Irish Times, touring Galway, Longford, Ennis and Dublin from November 7th to 23rd. Tickets from €10 plus fees. Book now at nomagicpill.ie. Funded by the Arts Council.
RTE. Supporting the arts.
Ag taku leis na halianna.
Miele products are designed to last up to 20 years, giving you perfect results year after year. That's quality ahead of its time. Shop the Miele range today at Power City.
Discover Centra Simple Savers, your go-to for great everyday value. Like Nestle Cheerios 540 gram, only €3. Cadbury Roses and Heroes 290 gram cartons, €4 each. Plus Coors and Heineken 12 bottle packs, €15 each. Enjoy easy, simple prices weekly on your favorite products. Centra, live every day. Enjoy alcohol sensibly.
Over 10,000 Irish businesses use the All Go MasterCard to reward their staff. Do they know something you don't? They know that the AllGo gift card is tax-free and it can be used anywhere that accepts MasterCard. They can order a physical or a digital card for emailing to staff, and they know AllGo is a guaranteed Irish company. Get in the know. Ask AllGo. Join our webinar now on allgogiftcard.com. AllGo MasterCard is a business-only gift card issued by EML Money DAC and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland.
From the worksite to new client meetings, is your business vehicle ready for 2025? Get your business geared up with the Ford 251 sales event. Running from the 1st to the 16th of November, we have incredible savings across our Ford Pro commercial vehicle range with up to €4,500 off the Transit and more savings on the all-new Transit Custom and Ranger. The all-new Transit Connect and Courier are also in stock for 2025. Discover all our 251 offers at Ford.ie. T's and C's apply. Offer ends November 16th.
If you run a business, you've lots of responsibilities, but you may not know that reporting on your gender pay gap is one of them. All organisations with over 150 employees are now legally required to report on some key gender pay gap calculations. These calculations were done on a date of your choosing in June and must be reported by the end of this year. Find out how to report correctly at gov.ie/gender pay gap, an initiative of the Government of Ireland.
Hi, Marty Whelan here. Did you know there's a 1 in 3 lifetime risk of developing shingles? The risk of shingles increases with age and in those with weakened immune systems. Patients describe shingles as a burning, stabbing or itching feeling, usually accompanied by a painful rash. Ask your doctor, pharmacist or practice nurse about shingles and visit understandingshingles.ie to learn more.
Understanding Shingles, brought to you by GSK.
At Screwfix, you can click and collect over 10,000 trade products in as little as 1 minute. So whether it's sockets in Swords or radiators in Roscommon, when you need it yesterday, just click at screwfix.ie and collect at your local store 7 days a week. T's and C's apply. Visit screwfix.ie for full details.
And welcome back to Arena and this Dublin Book Festival special, where we're celebrating the 10th anniversary of Winter Papers. Ah, yeah. They're still very lively, and they're still very live, our audience here at Number One Mid-Mill Lane. We've heard from some of our contributors to the journal already on the programme. But right now, Paul Noonan of Bell X1 and Houseplants is going to have a little chat with us before we hear a further song. Paul, essentially, we're talking, when we talk about Houseplants, yourself and Dahi O'Droni, who's just behind you. You're all looking very dapper tonight, too, I have to say, the Houseplants. You've Sinead White and Glenn Keating with you this evening. This is a blend of storytelling and dance beats. There's a challenge for you. Get a bit of storytelling and something that we all want to just jump up and dance to onto the floor.
Yeah. That's the brief. And we try to pull that off, and sometimes it's more successful than others.
Is it much of a battle between the two aspects of it, or are they as separate as I'm making them out to be, the story, the beat?
I think it's dance music with heart is what we try to do. Dahi and I just kind of, how we built the first record and how we built a lot of this was we just exchanged things online until we kind of zero in on something. Me with words mainly and drums, and Dahi with everything else. So we try not to, I think thought is the enemy often in all kinds of creative endeavor. Yeah. So we try to find something that just feels right and not be too overwrought with the messaging or singular with the theme of the record. It's sort of, it's
whatever
thematically it jumps all over the shop, really.
And in terms of the piece that we're about to hear, John McGahern is an inspiration here. Yeah. Very much a literary starting point, was it?
Yeah, it's a take on this song we're about to do is a take on a short story called My Love, My Umbrella, which is a beautifully sort of contained breakup story,
yeah. Now changed into a breakup song, yeah. That you might want to dance to.
Well, this is the slow set section. Yeah.
Okay, smooching is allowed. It's official. Let us hear My Love, My Umbrella from Houseplants.
Walking through the city tonight, river reflecting the neon lights in the rain. In the rain. Rain so fierce, the streets were a dance of glass shapes and shoulders advancing in the rain. In the rain. When the summer gave me a swagger I didn't earn, told you story, made you cross, made you burn in the rain. In the rain. I leaned in and kissed you on the throat. You just smiled and fixed the collar of your coat in the rain. Oh, my love, under my umbrella, oh, my love, don't know what to tell ya, oh, my love, under my umbrella, oh, my love.
Should let it wash away this poor
This love, it waxes and wanes. I panicked and said, let's get married all the same. What do you say? Love for what you thought I was before you knew me. Now you can see right through me. It's a shame. Oh, my love, under my umbrella, oh, my love, I don't know what to tell you, oh, my love, under my umbrella, oh, my love.
Almost put up with the breakup if it sounded like that, wouldn't you? My love, my umbrella from Houseplants. Absolutely gorgeous stuff. And they'll be heading out on tour. They'll be back to this with another song before the end of the program. They'll be heading out on tour later in the year. And if that's what it's going to sound like live, I guess a lot of people want to go to that tour. Let us come back to our panel of contributors to this year's Winter Papers here on stage. Still with us, co-editor Kevin Barry, poets and writers Fiona O'Rourke, Angela Flannery, Alice Lyons, and Paulina Cosgrave. Angela, your essay in Winter Papers is called The Rabbit. Let's do what we did with Kevin. Just dive straight in, because you're going to read the opening section.
Yeah. One. It's October 2022, and soon we're going to run out of money. My debut novel was published earlier in the year, and it's been selling well, but the advance is long gone. I do the sums in my head as I sit at the kitchen table, eating cocoa noodles with my teenage son, who doesn't yet understand the difference between poverty and simply running out of money. We've enough for 3, maybe 4 months. He didn't ask to live from hand to mouth. That was all my doing, and complaining about things now will only waste the energy that I need to fix them. Last time we were on the skids was after I gave up my job in broadcasting to write a book. Incensed by the suggestion that it was a stupid thing to do, I went on a cleaning rampage and scoured the house until I barely recognised it. Then I locked our belongings into the box room, and in a manoeuvre I thought ingenious but my family took as further proof of idiocy, I put the house on Airbnb. We spent the summer house-sitting, just me and the boy, cruising down the M50 with 2 suitcases, my laptop and his Xbox in the boot. It was no hardship, staying in houses fancier than our own. One had a trampoline, raspberry bushes, and a greenhouse of rampant tomatoes. The others came with cats that ignored us, and dogs that didn't care who walked them and picked up their shit, so long as somebody did. It was an adventure. We made money, and when it was time for my son to go back to school, we moved home. 5 years on, Airbnb is no longer an option. We've acquired a cat, a ruthless killer who leaves half-eaten mice and baby birds on the good rug. Once, there was a stiff, greasy rat that measured 1.5 feet from tip to tail. I'd have been less surprised to find a salmon on the living room floor. In my son's bedroom, a party speaker pumps out Kanye on a loop. Diplomatic relations are such that you need proof of onward travel, folded laundry, or an open bin bag to gain entry. He keeps the blind down and rising out of his bed, illuminated by a bare purple bulb, is a hummock of neither clean nor dirty clothes. ASAP Rocky and Travis Scott scowl at me from the walls. The floor is rubble, school books, empty monster cans, clown-sized Nikes. I bend down to retrieve an empty plate. Christ knows how many are buried in here. You can smell the mouldering bread beneath a top note of fox piss football boots and Dove for Men deodorant. This was once the home of a super host. Sometimes, when I'm meant to be writing my new novel, I log on to my old Airbnb listing just to marvel at how clean the house used to be. It's like coming across old photos of yourself and being astonished by how attractive you once were. That's where I'm at with the house. We couldn't take a lodger, not even a culty student desperate for digs. Short of selling the place, there's no way to monetize it. We'll have to sell something else instead. I look at the giant slurping noodles beside me. He's all arms and legs, like an octopus with a greyhound's head. I whip the bowl out from under him. Come on, I say, out to the shed. For what? He grumbles. For the ladder. I need you to hold it while I take the rabbit down.
And there in that last line, we get the title of Angela Flannery's essay, The Rabbit. And you know, you didn't have a bunny rabbit that you kept in the shed. The rabbit is a reference to a painting. You might bring us back to that painting that you bought in 2005, 17 years previously.
Yeah, yeah. So I bought a painting that was a portrait of a rabbit by the Japanese artist Atsushi Kaga, who he graduated from NCAD in 2005. And at the graduate show in the RHA, I saw this painting. And it was kind of a 3 foot by 2 foot, you know, just a straight portrait of this anthropomorphic rabbit, like a kind of Victorian looking portrait with just a brown background and this ghostly figure of a rabbit that kind of had an expression on his face that was halfway between sadness and bemusement. And I kind of thought, I just know what you mean. So I... You know, and I just really wanted it, but there was a red dot on it, so I knew it was sold. So I asked the gallery assistant, could she get me and put me in touch with the artist? And so she took my email address, I think, and then a couple of days later, I went up to his studio in Broadstone and asked him, you know, could you do another one? And I mean, ethically, I didn't realize at the time, you know, you don't ask artists to bootleg their own work, especially when it's sold. And he said, no, I could do a different one. And he started talking about different ways that he could change the rabbit. And I agreed, and he put a bit of ivy in the top and bottom corners, and then I went back to collect it. And so my painting was called What Are You Afraid Of? Trust Me, I'm Bunny. And I had it for 17 years, and in the end, I sold it.
Yeah, and I don't want you to talk about too much about the selling of it, because that would give the entire essay away. But maybe we will say that an auction house called Sotheby's of London was involved in the selling of your painting. Could you give us a sense, 15 years later, what sort of price was the art, to Kaga's, what sort of price were his paintings fetching?
Well, he was doing much grander scale paintings, and the rabbit was the central character, his protagonist. It's his alter ego. It's called Usachi, is the rabbit's name. They were enormous, and they were selling for sometimes more than €250,000 or dollars.
All right, okay. So we will find out if you read the essay whether or not Angela got £250,000 for hers. We'll be back with more after this break.
RTE Radio 1.
Michael Flatley's Lord of the Dance. A lifetime of standing ovations. Borgosh Energy Theatre, January 15th to 18th. Michael Flatley's Lord of the Dance. Michael Flatley's Lord of the Dance for 5 shows, January 15th to 18th, including a matinee show on Saturday, January 18th.
Entertainment updates on RTE Radio 1.
Bosch, appliances you can rely on. Choose from Bosch's 5-year warranty range of home appliances. For more information, go online to powercity.ie. T's and C's apply.
Dreaming of that new car feeling? Visit your local Peugeot dealer between now and the 10th of November for our 251 sales event with stylish hybrid and electric Peugeots to suit everyone. Put a deposit on a 251 Peugeot today and get a €500 Dunn Stores gift card, free 3-year service plan and free road tax for a year. The 251 Peugeot sales event, now on at your local Peugeot dealership. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid until 10th of November. For full terms and conditions, see Peugeot.ie.
Introducing the Ford Suites, Ireland's newest conference and events destination, brought to you by the Johnstown Estate. A 4-star luxury hotel and spa, centrally located and designed with exquisite experiences in mind. Catering for large-scale events, the Ford Suites is stylish, sophisticated and state-of-the-art, with an LED video wall, private entrance, grounds for team building and more. The Ford Suites. Ignite your aspirations. Discover more at thejohnstownestate.com.
It's oh so lonely.
A Terrible Beauty, the brand new album from Christy Moore, featuring the tracks Black and Amber, Come On the Manor, Lemon Sevens and Boy in the Wild. A Terrible Beauty from Christy Moore, out now at Golden Discs and goldendiscs.ie.
Sky Mobile is finally in Ireland, and now everyone can expect more. Like 99% 4G coverage with unlimited data, calls and texts to any network in Ireland. All for just €15 a month for life. Yep, just €15 a month for life. So don't settle for less. Search Sky Mobile and make the switch today. Expect more with Sky Mobile. SIM only plan with 12-month minimum term. Includes unlimited mobile data, standard texts and calls to all Irish networks. Further terms apply.
This November, experience the award-winning play No Magic Pill by Christian O'Reilly, a hilarious and heartfelt story inspired by disability rights activist Martin Nocton. Transformative theatre, Irish Independent, gutsy and engaging, The Irish Times, touring Galway, Longford, Ennis and Dublin from November 7th to 23rd. Tickets from €10 plus fees. Book now at nomagicpill.ie. Funded by the Arts Council.
RTE.
Supporting the arts.
Ag tacu leis na halli ana.
And welcome back to Number One with Mill Lane and the final part of our Dublin Book Festival special here on Arena. Alice Lyons, I'm coming to you to talk about your essay in Winter Papers, Alice, Amantai Surrounded by the Dead. This is all about a visit of yours to Krakow and the apartment owned by the Polish poet Czesław Miłosz. This was a residency courtesy of both the Miłosz and the Heaney family.
Yes.
You were in the Miłosz apartment.
Yes.
Two giant Nobel winners on your shoulders, the Heaney on one and the Miłosz on the other, and others in the background.
Yeah.
The experience of sitting in his apartment, Miłosz's apartment, writing poetry at desks where he may have written, on chairs where he may have sat. Mm. What was that?
It was daunting in a certain sense, but it was also really interesting, and this is what I wrote about in the essay, is that Miłosz, like Heaney in a certain sense, is this edifice of poetry. In Poland, he casts this massive shadow. He was the poet of the democratic opposition. And I never really took him to heart. I always admired him, but there's another Polish poet who has motivated me to try to learn Polish, called Wisława Szymborska, who's another Nobel winner.
So three Nobel laureates.
Three Nobel laureate poets in this milieu, and it was a process of really breaking down the edifice around Miłosz and really coming to admire him a lot more, and that's really what the essay is about.
Yeah. How that came about and the kind of lessons that you learned there, the ghosts, as the essay suggests, all around you as you did it. However, you I think the Szymborska poetry speaks to you in a way that perhaps the other Miłosz doesn't. You've chosen one that you might read for us from Szymborska.
I have, yep. I chose this. It's an implosive poem. I love poems that kind of are so packed and they go, they contain themselves and they go down and deep. And this poem is, it reflects stanza by stanza, three short stanzas on every word in the title, and the title is Some People Like Poetry. Some people, that means not everyone, not even most of them, only a few. Not counting school where you have to, and poets themselves, you might end up with something like 2
per thousand. Like. But then you can like chicken noodle soup, or compliments, or the color blue, your old scarf, your own way, petting the dog. Poetry. But what is poetry anyway? More than one rickety answer has tumbled since that question first was raised. But I just keep on not knowing, and I cling to that like a redemptive handrail.
Alice Lyons with the poetry there of Slava Szymborska and a poem called Some People Like Poetry. Some people like poetry, Kevin Barry. Some people like essays. Some people like short stories. You like all of them. That's what you give us in Winter Papers 10. How did you manage to write a novel? Or how do you manage, because I won't get to talk much about it, the novel that is currently out, how did you even find time to get there with The Heart in Winter?
Yeah, the kind of deal now is mornings I kind of write my own stuff, and afternoons I do kind of Winter Papers, and the evenings I'll go out and weed the garden. That's the general kind of run of it. So yeah, so it's kind of... you're juggling at some times of the year, okay, you know. But I've always found over the 10 years that Winter Papers gives me a great break from myself in the summer, you know, when I'm just looking at other people's work. It's like not dealing with my own stuff, and you can go back to it refreshed in after just a few weeks.
I'm sure that is a cleansing process in many ways.
Yeah.
Sometimes many writers say when you move away from it, then you can go back to it.
Then you go back and all the problems have kind of mysteriously fixed themselves in some ways.
Isn't that easy? Yeah.
That's it. That's all you have to do. Yeah.
Just stop for a while, and when you go back, all will be well. I presume we will be sitting here, I hope, in 10 years' time talking about Winter Papers 20.
Yeah.
Can you see further into the future with it now?
For sure. I mean, actually, in the essay I wrote, one of the things I was looking at was progress, and we should always be careful what we consider progress to mean. And often we think progress means expanding and making something bigger. But actually, a good way of looking at progress is just to do the same thing, but to try to do it a little bit better every year and try to make it better and better and better as you go along.
Fail again, fail better,
that's it,
to quote another writer. Thank you very much to all of our contributors this evening. That is almost it for tonight's Arena Special, live from the Dublin Book Festival. As I said, thanks to our contributors, Angela Flannery, Vona Grourke, Paulina Cosgrave, and Alice Lylands, and of course, Kevin Barry, who co-edits the Winter Papers with Olivia Smith, who is down in the body of the audience somewhere hiding. Our thanks also to Houseplants, who are Paul Noonan and Dahi O'Droney, joined tonight by Sinead White and Glenn Keating. I'd also like to thank the Dublin Book Festival, particularly Julianne Mooney-Siren, for hosting this event in this gorgeous venue, I think you'll all agree, number one, Windmill Lane. Our team tonight on sound, Gar Duffy, Ruth Kennington and Tom Norton. The researchers were Paula Shields and Leah Murphy. Ollie Hamilton was the broadcast coordinator, and tonight's show and programme was produced by Kay Sheehy. We'll play out with another track from Houseplants. The latest album, Half Known Things, out now. You can catch them on tour December and January, Galway, Cork, Limerick and Dublin. Houseplants.band/live for full details. This is In the Right Light.
Be well, you're saying, be safe, you're saying, well, how can I be safe when we are dangling by a thread? Oh, here we going now, the halftime showing now. Yeah, here we going now, catastrophize with all my might, it's erotically charged. Everything is beautiful in the right light, everything is beautiful. In the right light, everything is beautiful. In the right light now, everything is beautiful. We're driving in your car. We're driving in your car so we can face the same way and somewhat drop our guard. You're looking out the window and you're pointing at the vines.
You're looking at the window, saying these grapes are gonna make it. They're gonna stand up to the frost.
Everything is beautiful in the right light. Everything is beautiful in the right light. Everything is beautiful in the right light now. Everything is beautiful.
Beads are no longer in order, like beads on a string. Like beads on a string. How will it be? How will it be?
In the right light, what a wonderful sound that is. Just before we finish up, we have a minute. I'll give each of you 10 seconds on one other piece in the journal that you suggest people should read. Let's go. Alice, that piece really wants to be heard, doesn't it? Alice. Oh, no, sorry, I should have warned you. Angela.
Sarah Baum, her winter diary. I just love the way she writes about animals and landscape.
Vaughan O'Groark.
Lauren Elkin's piece, really classy writing.
Peter Murphy's interview of John T. Davis, unique insight into filmmaking.
And Peter Murphy sitting in the front row of the audience tonight. Big shout out to you for this evening, Peter. Is it asking the editor, one of the co-editors,
All of it, Charlie.
What about that piece by Kevin Barry?
That's the one to avoid, yeah, but the rest
of them. Yeah, the rest of them are of a fairly high standard. Alice, sorry, I didn't get a chance to talk to you beforehand about that, but I'm sure you have plenty to offer. Thank you so much, as I say, to all of you for being with us here live on RTE Radio 1 and this special broadcast from number one, Windmill Lane. The Dublin Book Festival is now fully and absolutely underway. You can find out details of all of the events on dublinbookfestival.com. John Creedon will be with you after the news. I'll be back with you tomorrow night as usual at 7 o'clock.